Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 141. Yet again, we are having a dual presentation of the Caffeination. We are actually over at Ustream.tv at the same point in time, so we're trying to get this this whole thing worked out, set up correctly, but I think we actually got it this time. We have a slightly different setup. We have a slightly different couple things going on. I actually deleted the old video because it really wasn't anything special, and it actually kind of broke up somewhere in the middle, and there was just like a frozen picture of me doing... So if you actually go over there and see the video, you'll see what I mean. But there was a frozen picture of me in a very strange-looking face, stranger than usual, that is, and there was nothing else. Just a little bit of audio, and for some reason the audio was jumping around, so we're going to try and do this all the correct and normal way here. So we have some kind of strange conflagration all put together here at the Caffeination Podcast. We have a great show lined up for you today. We have a little bit of musical accompaniment from the PodSafe Music Network. We have Ustream.tv worked out and hopefully set up ready. We actually have a pseudo tripod at this point in time. It's actually something like a 60-year-old box of Bisquick that's kind of on end and propped about 6 inches off the top of my Mac laptop. And then the Mac laptop itself is propped up on a 1953 unabridged Webster's Dictionary. So we are going old school with this edition here, I guess you could say. So hopefully everything's going to work out all right. And if it does, I'll post the link to the video over at thecaffeination.com, which, by the way, we've been relatively good with writing articles. And I'm actually going to reference two of my own articles. It's a little bit of self-love in there, but hopefully you won't mind. Two articles I wrote on some of the topics that you're going to find a little bit further down. They kind of expound upon my thoughts about some of the different things that that I've been seeing online, and a lot of it is not necessarily the most serious or the most or the deepest discussion or anything like that. We're just trying to get some stuff out there. First up, we'd just like to get a little notice in about our sponsor. If you're looking for a better way to present or work together during conference calls, your solution is quite simple. Web conferencing with GoToMeeting. During your call, everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com and your computer screen shows up on their monitors. It's like you're all in the same room. GoToMeeting is perfect for sales or product demos, training or real-time collaboration. Plus, you're not charged a permanent fee like some of the other providers out there. You can meet as long as you want for as often as you need with one flat rate. With GoToMeeting, you can meet with anyone, anywhere, anytime. It's awesome. You'll not only end up saving a lot of time, but a bunch of money as well. I mean, just think of all the money you're going to save on lunch. You only have to buy for yourself now. See for yourself. Try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast. That's PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com/podcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. All right, well, the GoToMeeting has been a very good sponsor here at the Caffeination. I think well on 8 months now that they've been sponsoring the show, so that's helped us out immeasurably around here, and hopefully we'll continue a partnership like that going forward. So actually the hand kind of blocked the entire camera there for a second, but we're trying to, that's breaking the fourth wall, so to speak, but still. All right, hopefully this is going to be a little bit better. Now, one of the strange things about this particular taping of the Caffeination is I was trying to use this camera on my PC, would not work. I have an older webcam that was actually given to me by a student who is graduating. It's really horrible resolution, and some of the grainiest pictures I've ever seen have come out of it. Now, this is a very clear webcam, very clean, very crisp, and yeah, it actually focuses very nicely and easily. Smooth, seamless integration with the whole process. Who makes it? Yes, Microsoft. Microsoft, because this is the Xbox 360 Live Vision camera. You use it to play all kinds of games on the Xbox 360, which are, somewhat fun and everything like that. The catalog of games that have been attached to this thing really hasn't developed yet. You can put your face in a couple games like poker and Uno and stuff like that. But then you have the rooms being trolled like, hey, dude, are there any girls here? Let me see your picture if you have the camera. It gets irritating. But it has a dual purpose as a webcam. So you hook it up to your PC and you're treated to a gorgeous high-resolution picture about the size of a postage stamp. I have not been able to figure out how to get this video to expand. Can't change the size. There's no way to do it in the thing. However, the funny thing is, despite drivers or anything else like that, you can plug this sucker into your Macintosh and it just works. And this doesn't work with all the webcams. Like, I've had a lot of trouble using webcams that aren't necessarily Mac friendly. It's either the people didn't want to write the drivers for them or anything, but this is probably one of the simplest webcams that I've ever been able to use with a Mac. So it just works. That's all I asked it to do, and it just did. Which is really funny because it doesn't function that well on the PC. And there's a lot of fun little topics about that on the online, but there's not very many good support topics on it, because most of it's just, oh, I can't play it with the Xbox. The Xbox thing works fine. In fact, it does exactly what it's supposed to do. It's the only webcam you can use on the Xbox, which, you know, you could take it or leave it, but still, it's... It is what it is. You can do video chat with it, but this is much better, and it allows me a little bit more freedom with how I want to operate the podcast. So I think I've wasted enough of your time talking about that. Figure we'll get in a little bit of mention of our Grand Central number. That's 215-240-1319. Or you can click the Call Me button at caffeination.com, which, by the way, Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Our show is listed over at techpodcast.com, where all the shows have agreed to create child-safe and educational content. So you can head on over there and check out all the other different shows. They have a huge range of technology-related podcasts, from stuff all the way, you know, as complex and source-level code as the Pearlcast, up to stuff that's much more our level. I mean, we're not really a high-tech or anything like that podcast. I like to think we're very much geared towards most people who... You may be a techie, you may not. We just try to be entertaining at the very least. So hopefully you're finding this show entertaining, and it lives, as we've said before, over at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. And yeah. All right, and then the last thing we have to actually play for you today is we're trying to spread the word around about some of the other fun podcasts that I've found out there, and I'm actually trying to get my show's promo, as it were, heard. So if you're listening to the show in response to hearing a promo from podcastpromos.com or anything else like that, thank you, and thank the person who played my promo on their show. I mean, it really helps to drive traffic, and we like to find new people that way. So if you're new and you'd like to drop us a line, you could send an email to caffeination@gmail.com. Now, this is I was actually approached to put my promo on a site listing service called... So it's promotime.podomatic.com. Now, we have a very good relationship with Podomatic. That's actually where the Caffeination started. So it's kind of fun that it goes full circle. And this is a fun little podcast called Brains Matter Podcast at brainsmatter.com. I'll let the host tell you a little bit about it. And then maybe after you're done listening to the Caffeination, or watching, as it were, you can head on over there and check that out. Again, here's the Brains Matter Podcast. Any day now. There we are.
Do you like science? How about general knowledge and trivia? If you do, then the Brains Matter podcast is the show for you. Brains Matter is a show about interesting topics from the world of knowledge, from science to philosophy, and from history to astronomy, together with interviews with various brainy people. So why not listen into the show, learn something new, and then share it with your mates? So come and join the ordinary guy and subscribe to the Brains Matter podcast today. Follow the instructions at the website www.brainsmatter.com. That's www.brainsmatter.com. Come and join in the learning.
And not to mention the fun.
All right, so I'd like to thank the guys over at Promo Time for putting that one up and actually putting up with us over there. So hopefully people will get to hear that, and it'll circle around, and you can head on over to Brains Matter. I know they're going to be on my listening thing this week, so I'm going to check them out, see how fun they actually are. Sounds like they have a good show going on over there, and I don't know why, but I seem to be a real sucker for Australian podcasts. There's a couple of the ones that I listen to that are perennial favorites in my in bin, as it were, and a lot of them are Australian. So you know, that's you know, it all started, I think, with Dave Gray over at the Global Geek podcast. So you can head on over there and check out that's globalgeek.com. But this is Brains Matter podcast. So all right, and might as well head on into the tech. Oh wait, Well, we're going to actually do the PodSafe music in a little bit, so hopefully you'll stick around with that. But we're going to stick it to the tech tidbits right now. We didn't have any tech talk for this time. We didn't have anything to really expound upon. I wasn't trying anything new. And one of the things that I was actually experimenting with a little bit today, this whole Ustream thing, I was actually experimenting with taking the camera and pointing it at the screen. That did exactly bubkiss. There was not very much that you could see, and part of me wants to actually use the Mac in this, just because the Mac's not on a CRT. So, yes, I'm still using a giant CRT from back in the days of yore, and hopefully we'll eventually get enough money to drop a flat screen in here, but not anytime soon. All right. Now, we have this story. It's a little bit old, but this one's from the... From TechDirt, which, like I've said, I have kind of a love-hate relationship with TechDirt itself. Some of the stories are really good, but a lot of the commentary and a lot of the blurbs about the stuff just really irritate me. But this one's actually kind of fun. In case you didn't know, Viacom issued a huge amount of cease and desist orders to YouTube. They basically wanted, using the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, they requested that over 100,000 videos be yanked right off YouTube. So YouTube, of course, did this without any question, which, you know, you can argue the pros and cons of that. But it turns out that they caught quite a few false positives in this. And the entire reason that I'm relating you to this story, this is a lot more serious than anything we usually cover here at the Caffeination, but it's because the term they used to label the false positives, they're called dolphins. I don't know why that struck me, but the whole thing where you have the you have this you know, the wide ranging net that gets thrown out there, and every once in a while you catch a dolphin or two. So save the dolphins. They're actually in order to save the dolphins, Viacom has agreed to actually. What was I saying? Viacom has actually agreed to have somebody actually look at the videos they're trying to take down, as opposed to just using keywords. So hey, that's fun. That's makes actual sense. So yet one more company that's jumping on the common sense bandwagon, and thank you for that. All right, so. All right, yeah, we're still trying to work this whole thing out here, but still. All right, next up we have a real alternative energy source. Now we've thrown out some really strange older gifts and presents and childhood toys here at the Caffeination. We actually talked about the You Find It Yourself Geiger counter from back in the 50s. It actually came with real radioisotopes to actually make sure your Geiger counter was working. But this is a little bit different, and it's from Japan, so you know it has to be awesome. Yes, this is the 1980s, or as it's labeled over at Engadget, the dubious 1980s in-home nuclear reactor ad, lovingly called the Chernobyl. So I get they're guessing and they're hypothesizing that this is actually before the disaster struck. So well, we hope. It's just one of those things where it's not really media sensible. Some days you just can't talk, which is most days, ending with a Y, you know what I mean? But it's sensational coverage of things in the news media and everything. You kind of turn the tide against certain things. You have one little meltdown, you know, basically 70 or 80 square miles of Russian countryside are uninhabitable, and a couple three-eyed fish, and what do you get? Well, no more lovely nuclear reactors in kitchens in Japan with women with what look to be plastic haircuts. But it's really real fun. You should head on over there and check it out. Of course, if you can read it in the native Japanese, we'd really appreciate a lot more of a human translation. I don't know how many people out there have tried to translate something on the web. I mean, even when I was in German class, I actually tried to, you know, use the web translators and everything. It just butchers any language that I've ever seen. Specifically, a lot of the languages that aren't necessarily romance based or have a I don't know. I guess it's a Western language. It's horrible with any Chinese, Japanese. The one person I actually worked with for a little bit was fluent in Thai, and they were trying to look at one of the web pages, and they said, "This is absolutely horrible. They've butchered it. This word doesn't even appear here. They have the word gorilla just kind of thrown into the middle of the sentence." So I guess it's a lot with inflection. Some of it's definitely tonal qualities in the words that just don't translate well. So, all right, now next thing we have up here is another slightly serious thing from the Caffeination Podcast. Imagine that. Internet radio will go silent. Yes, we're going to have radio dead air on June 26th. That'll be 2 days from the day this podcast is taping. Now, we always try and throw down the date that this is actually recording at the beginning of the podcast, but we didn't. This podcast is being recorded on June 24th, 2007. This is the 141st edition here at the Caffeination, and you can find us over at caffeination.com. Figure it out yourself, or you can just search for a Caffeination Podcast, and I think we're pretty much the only one, so you have a good chance of finding us. I don't know if Coffee Podcast works yet. We're trying to, SEO optimization and all kinds of crazy stuff, so that when you actually search for Coffee Podcast, you come up with our podcast, because we love coffee and it's part of the name, but not really. So that's what you get when you do this. But all right, the Copyright Royalty Board here in the United States has determined that they're raising the prices to astronomical rates. So sites like Pandora and I think Live 365 and a whole bunch of others would actually end up paying, like, I think in royalties they would end up bankrupting themselves completely, which is probably part of the idea behind this push. They don't really see internet radio as a broadcast medium. They don't see it as an advertising medium, and I fail to see why, because I mean it's been a pretty much proven fact. I mean, even something as simple as the hit test over at Adam Curry's Daily Source Code at curry.com or dailysourcecode.com. The hit test, this guy Jan Paulette puts together three classic songs, usually, where he cuts it down to like one or two notes, plays it twice or three times, and has you guess what it is. Now, it's been proven that since the large listenership of the Daily Source Code, whenever they put a hit test out, there's actually a jump in purchases in iTunes of the songs that were featured. A lot of it's just people going back saying, oh, I remember that song, or I'd like to hear more of that song. That's what we try and do with the PodSafe Music. Hopefully, you'll like an artist, and we have a great one for you today, let me just tell you. It was, for a little while, it was kind of hard. You're like, okay, I have a certain set of PodSafe artists I like. Do I really want to keep searching? And it's getting to be hard. But we've had a tremendous outpouring of support for doing the PodSafe Music here at the Caffeination. So that's caffeination@gmail.com in case you'd like to throw down a little email to us. But hopefully that'll continue. And please let us know what kind of music you want to hear. Don't even take my personal tastes into account. If you like rap, I'm not really the biggest rap fan. Please, hey, send us an email. We'll put it out up there. You like some country? I like some country every once in a while. You like some bluegrass? Put some bluegrass up there. I mean, whatever. If we have a request for it, we will put it on the show, provided that it's not incredibly profane. But then again, you got a little death metal. Nobody can really tell if they're screaming FS or whatever else they decide to do. And we might actually have an unexpected visitor yet again. If you saw the video for the last podcast, we had a fun little fact where my cat, in the middle of the podcast, jump up and sat right there in the middle of the camera. Now, if you actually go over there and check out the video, you'll see this. But my hand's kind of sitting there now. But she stuck her face right in there and kind of stuck the nose way on into the camera and then disappeared completely. So I don't know if maybe it surprised her or whatever else, but I thought it was kind of fun, so I thought I'd pass that along. All right, so basically, in pro tip, back to the story at hand, and stop babbling, Paul. All right, internet radio will go silent on June 26th as a protest for the ratings hike, and I think it actually goes into effect somewhere in July. So there's been a whole bunch of put-offs and take-ons, basically. So hopefully this will actually work. It's also my parents' anniversary on June 26th, so it stinks if they were going to be trying to listen to some internet radio. I love Pandora internet radio, so if you're in the U.S., unfortunately, that's the only, or not in, unfortunately, but the only place you can listen to Pandora internet radio right now is in the U.S., unfortunately. There we go. Correct word order. Thank you. All right, so next thing we have up here is kind of one of those things that it's just like a little bug. I wanted to throw that out there and see if anybody else sees this, but apparently there's some stories of certain ISPs actually taking your clickstream data, taking the, like, for instance, I'm sitting at caffeination.com, click on a link to the story, it heads on over there, and then all of a sudden, so from every place that I click thereafter, that's the click stream, as you call it. That's where the traffic flows from my account. So certain ISPs are hijacking the click stream, as opposed to before, where they were selling the click stream data. And there's a There's apparently a company that says Ads by Fair Eagle, which is an adware on your computer, and it's installed. It's kind of Java-based, but it's basically run by the ISP. So when a web page pops up, the ISP will replace certain sections of the page with content they approve of instead. So instead of seeing the ads that would pay for a website like thecaffeination.com, you're going to end up seeing ads that pay for Verizon or Cavalier or Comcast or Fios or whatever else there is. But and I realize I move a little bit too quickly for this camera, so moving slowly. There we go. All right. It's hard to show exasperation in slow motion. It ends up looking very disingenuous, shall we say. All right, now on to the kind of content that you come here to the Caffeination for. This is one of the craziest inventions I've ever seen, and at $30, I'm thinking this is going to be awesome. This is a robotic Venus flytrap. Yes, you heard me right, ladies and gentlemen. This is a giant little Shop of Horrors plant kind of thing that sits there, and as soon as it has a scent that's down in the middle of the flower, and which attracts flies. Apparently, they find it irresistible, and as soon as it senses one of the little buggers lands there, it snaps shut, and I don't know how it actually kills the fly. Maybe it kills it with pressure, maybe there's not actually like a place where it can digest or remove, but it kind of just splats it. But and then after it opens up, it emits a loud belch. So that's awesome. Now if there's a button on there that can make it do it, I would buy one of these. Now it's only $30. So, and you gotta love the box art. Definitely looks like a sandworm for Beetlejuice. It says flycatcher swatting all known flies dead, and it burps. So you know this is going to be in every single guy's apartment by the end of the year. This is one of those things where it's like, oh, dude, I would love that. The wife will never go for it. But then again, when we have certain things like when we're having the block party in a couple weeks, I could definitely see this being a hit with the fans, all the little kiddies. You know, they would stop karaoke just to look at this thing. So maybe that's a good thing. All right, next up here at the Caffeination, how lazy are you out there? Now, I consider myself a relatively motivated person at some times, and then completely at the same point in time, I am a very lazy person. So there's a certain extent where, like, if I'm sitting in my office and something's outside my office, now I have one office, and then there's an office on the outside of that, and then the hallways beyond that. So every once in a while, if, like, there's a piece of paper or something's in a printer, I will roll my chair, weave it through little bits of traffic, out to the printer, grab something, then roll it back. That's how lazy I can be. But I've never been lazy enough to say, you know what, I have a paper towel roll in my house, and I would like to wave my hand in front of it, like so, and it would feed a paper towel out for me. Yeah, I mean, that's all fine in public restrooms, because I don't know where anybody else's hands have been. But then again, I'm not really a germaphobe. I'm like, you know what? People have survived for long enough now that I think we should try and build up a little bit of that immunity, and maybe disinfecting the heck out of everything really isn't helping everybody as much as they think it is. So, but this is just crazy. Now, this is a little gadget that I don't even know the price point for it. I don't really, it's $56 for the ability to never have to actually pull the roll. I mean, it won't cut the paper towel for you, so there's no point in doing that. All it does is it actually feeds exactly one section out. So it's like, and then you have to rip it. So $56 for the ability to wave your hand and have it feed something out. That's not really that cool. All right. Next up, we have something that's really cool. Now, you've heard of steampunk before. That's the where everything's supposed to look a little bit older, but instead of electricity and everything, everything's run on steam, which is just by the existence of all the tubes and everything. It's just really cool. I mean, I think that's one of the crazier, cooler sci-fi inventions that have come out recently. But now we have something which is definitely not steampunk, but rather I'm dubbing this Steam Racer. So this is Racer S, if you know what I mean. This is the British Steam Car Challenge has created a car which looks kind of like a mix between a boat, the Batmobile. Actually, it looks more like the Batboat. So it looks like a speedboat or something like that. Has what I believe is three tires fueling this thing along is capable of speeds of 150 to 200 miles an hour. And it actually hit 200 miles an hour on the Utah Salt Flats. That's the area where they do all the land speed record tests. Now, it doesn't look like it has a whole lot of cargo space, but so this might not be the next caffeination vehicle or anything like that, but definitely awesome. Definitely some place to look. Now, I don't know exactly what it uses to fuel the steam, but kind of cool. One of those things you definitely want to keep your eyeballs on, because whenever anybody says, "Oh, this is the next," this is the next internal combustion engine. This is the next this, that, or the other thing. They don't take into account that things don't necessarily always follow a planned progression. More often than not, it's something that comes completely out of the blue, which changes the paradigm. So this could be one of those such things. All right, now the next thing we have up here is just kind of like a little one-off. It's a one-and-done. Imagine a pad that's sitting on your desk about maybe 4x4. Then imagine all the little numbers, like you have a phone sitting on there. And then each one of these numbers extends about 4 inches up off the pad as a crystalline structure with the number on the end. And you have the Groove Quartz phone. So it looks kind of like the Fortress of Solitude right there. I just thought it was absolutely awesome. Now, I think this is only a concept phone, which kind of irritating. I think it is definitely a concept phone. It's kind of irritating because I would love one of these. It has a fun little calculator, a fun little calendar put down on there. So I think that's all OLED. And it has like alarms and everything else on there. But this is the kind of phone that it's a conversation starter. You sit it there in the middle of your desk and boink, and then you make the phone call. But I had something similar to this in my office. Well, at least a conversation starter phone. I actually took the shell off the phone because it wasn't working correctly. Messed around with the wires, stripped everything out, and had a completely naked phone sitting in the middle of my desk. And I got to tell you, I had more conversations start because of that than because of anything good, bad, or indifferent that I did in work for that year. And it was kind of a little bit, it was a little bit scary. It's like, wow, am I really that irrelevant that my phone is more interesting than me? But it turns out that the phone was just really cool. But, all right, now we've been talking a lot about ecotech around here lately, and this is a growing trend in technology, trend on the planet. This is the whole Inconvenient Truth meets Hollywood meets the capitalistic spirit. The Inconvenient Truth meets the capitalistic spirit is the easiest way to do this. So there's a lot of people saying, oh, well, why aren't we using this kind of energy? Why aren't we using that kind of energy? Now, you might wonder, what exactly does solar energy do? And we had an email question that I lost the gentleman's name. I'm really sorry. I think this might be Dave. I'm sorry if I lost your email. I'm sorry if you're not Dave and you emailed this in. But they wanted a little bit more information about the Google solar or carbon neutral initiative. So I actually found a video link that I'm not going to sit here and play the whole thing on the podcast. Just wanted to kind of put it up there. And you can take care of that on your own. So if you're interested in checking out the Google campus and their solar installation, which is apparently the largest corporate solar structure in North America, at the very least. So they're trying to really, like, reclaim all the energy in the massive data centers that they're using. So this is one really cool idea. So I'd heartily suggest you actually try and look at the video. Now, the next thing we have up here is yet another one of those articles where it's like, all right, wind power is supposed to be awesome here, right? And the United States, for all its phobias, for all its good, bad, indifference, has a large stretch of area that is well-suited to windmills. It's well suited to wind turbines. Now, why aren't there more of them? This is very cheap, rather inexpensive, and it's a way to get certain sections of the country off the grid. Now, there's a gentleman over at the Sci-Fi Tech blog who has decided to actually break this down. Steven Schleicher? Yeah, I think I got his name right. I'm sorry if you hear this, Steven, and I butchered your name. 1,000 pardons, please. I am really horrible at that. But what he did was he broke down why these things happen. He said basically, not here, not there. So everybody wants the whole NIMBY thing, and they cite certain problems. Now, they say, if you take the millions of acres that are actually usable for this, only 70% strike that. The basic thing is, out of all the different kinds of alternative energy sources, solar power, which is the one that everybody seems to gravitate the most, I guess because of the sci-fi factor, is the least efficient. Only 40% of the energy that is generated and dropped onto a solar panel is reclaimed. hydropower is 90% efficient. That's why you see it everywhere. I mean, that, and I'm pretty sure because dams have been built since prehistoric times to basically divert flow and everything like that. So it's a very simple, it's a very simple structure to take a pre-existing dam and drop a hydroelectric kind of engine into it, or build that into the concept of a dam, because you're not actually taking up anybody's extra resources. The dam would usually be there. So, which, by the way, if you ever have not had the chance, you should really take a tour of a hydroelectric dam. They're absolutely awesome. I'm not even talking like Hoover Dam sized. I'm talking like some of the ones on the Schuylkill River here in Philadelphia are actually like awesome. I mean, they're unbelievable, the amount of water that gets churned through there. And this is completely clean energy that's just powered by the flow of the river there. So music died. Got to throw another one up there. And there we go. All right. Seamless. Except for the fact that I talked about it. All right, so basically, Stephen just went through, and there's a lot of problems people say. The first thing is that there's a loud noise. Well, the turbines are quieter now. The second thing is that, they're afraid that birds are going to get killed by these things. Apparently, only 1 in 10,000 birds will ever get killed by a wind turbine, as opposed to the Exxon Valdez kind of spill that happens every now and then, and we're just supposed to deal with the whole gas and electric thing. So, and then there's the flicker, which is a shadow flicker, is actually what they say. So, what it would be is the sun's setting behind the thing, and do, 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 do. And it would just go by, and apparently it's irritating, and I'm pretty sure that it would probably cause seizures if it's done at the right frequency, but hopefully not. So, and then the last and final thing, which is the almighty dollar, is that property values apparently decrease near these things. But he cited some statistics which say this is flagrantly false. It says that basically when there's a wind power plant planned, the property values have an initial decrease. Then 2 years after they're actually built, there's a they come back up to normal levels. So it's all right, they're there, and nothing else is happening. So I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, if you're gonna sell your house in the next year or two, this is one of those things where it's like, you know what, maybe I'm gonna hold off. maybe I'd want to fight the whole wind power thing. But if you're gonna sell your house, and that's not what, maybe 5-10 years, then there's no point to opposing wind power, because it's going to come right back up at to the previous levels. So it's one of those things where you just hope people kind of get to be a little bit more sensible about the different things that are happening. All right, now next up in the tech tidbits thing, we already rocked out on wind power. The latest strange gambit in the RIAA's fight against piracy is apparently the latest amount of people that can actually be harmed by piracy are now corn farmers. Yeah, this sounds strange, and we're trying to find the exact quote, but that the RIAA people put out there. It's one of those things that you don't want to spend too much time on there, because then you're going to get sucked into the whole thing where they're really fighting amongst themselves. But one of the things they actually put out there was that, all right, if the movie does really well and piracy doesn't, foil it, and it's actually a good movie, then people will come more often, and then people will buy more popcorn, which will support the corn farmers. Yeah, because I'm really sure that all the corn that you buy is made in America, and that's why. I'm pretty sure you're importing some foreign corn there, and even if you're not, I mean, the amount of popcorn that's consumed, that's not necessarily the strong. If that's your strongest argument, you have some serious issues with your arguments there. So, on to the next little fun thing. Now, we've been talking a lot about ecotech recently, like I said, but one of the strangest things that actually has come out is people have been flocking to this one set of data, which is basically in 1991, Mount Pinatubo in the South Atlantic actually threw down and threw up a crap load of sulfur particles into the upper atmosphere. Now, what happened after this? Well, apparently all these sulfur particles circled the globe. You didn't know it. I didn't know it. I was relatively young at that point in time, but I'm not necessarily an old head despite how I look, but what it did was it actually ended up cooling the average temperature on the planet by 1 degree. So they say, okay, if what's good for the goose is good for the gander, what worked once is going to work great if we do it on a larger scale. So what we're going to do here is we're going to take a massive amount of sulfur particles, obliterate them, and send them into the upper ionosphere, because that'll cool the planet down. All right. Besides the fact that sulfur is not necessarily the healthiest thing for everyone to breathe, we're going to put that off to the side. So let's just say there's a little bit of deterioration in the orbit and it comes right back down and, you know, it ends up shredding your lungs or doing whatever else sulfur can do to your lungs. Let's just say that doesn't happen. And let's just say that no one ever saw the Highlander 2, The Quickening, the horrible movie that it was. What they did there was they actually had a wonderful shield that was all electric and everything to protect us from the Earth's rays. And it ended up kind of with a blanket effect. Basically, all the gases and all the greenhouse gases and all the miasma and smog and overcast skies and everything ended up rotating and boiling and brewing under this shield. And turned the atmosphere into absolute crap. And so what makes anybody think that if they cover the sky in sulfur, first of all, that's a really good idea? Because it's not really an idea that you can test. There's no test planet lying around say, you know what, we're going to crap a giant ton of sulfur particles all around the upper atmosphere. We'll just see what happens to the people living on that planet. I mean, that's part of the problems with some of the science that they're using here. And I can understand the problem, but maybe if people focused a little bit more on conservation and a little bit less on crackpot ideas, we might have a little bit more of a solution to this whole thing coming out. But still. All right. Now, next up, we have the two articles that I wrote very relatively recently. The first is a little thing that we're trying to do here at the Cavination. It's called Saturday Morning Cartoons. I take one of the more interesting articles that I find in my travels during the week, and And I just kind of pontificate upon it a little bit. I kind of throw down with a little fun thing here and there. Hopefully you'll find some of the stuff interesting. Now, this is the second installment. Of course, I missed last week because, well, I'm me. Now, this one is awesome. This is actually a article that was over at Gizmodo, then it was over at Instructables.com, which is where everybody originally got it. It is how to create your own Green Lantern ring. Now, and it actually works. And now Green Lantern's one of those superheroes from DC that I actually really liked. I don't remember, you know, specifically reading the comics or anything like that, but the adventures of Hal Jordan and whatnot, it just always kind of stuck with me for some reason. So having this up there, it was one of those very unique superheroes. I mean, to this day, hearing that in the brightest day, in the blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light. I mean, that's just an awesome line right there. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're a fan of comic books or whatnot, but that's just awesome. So, I mean, going all the way back, you know, you have Alan Scott, Hal Jordan, Guy Gardner, John Stewart. And he's actually a black guy. He's not the comedian. Kyle Radner, Jade, and there's a whole bunch of other ones. But it just seemed to be a little bit more of a greater good kind of concept. These are normal people that just are pure of heart that acquire these rings. And the fact that you can create your own one, I mean, this is a little bit different than making a Superman t-shirt. So getting a Superman t-shirt. And part of me still wants to get the Green Lantern symbol, but still. I just thought it was fun, thought I'd pass it along now. And you can read a whole bunch of the other stuff that I have over there. But then the last little thing is actually a kind of a little bit of a rant on my part. Now, I used to have on my personal MySpace page, I used to have a survey that had a whole bunch of different questions about me. And one of the questions that came up was, when I was in first grade, I wanted to be a blank when I grew up. Now, the answers were thus. Number one, fire truck. Number two, a computer guy. Number three, paleontologist. Number four, astronaut. To a man, every single person except my sister put down fire truck. I don't know what kind of helmet they think I wore. I don't know how short the bus was that I was riding in. I don't know what these people thought of me that I wanted to be a fire truck. I mean, I would have taken any of the other four as an acceptable guess, but fire truck? Come on. And then, so what it actually was I really wanted to be a paleontologist when I grew up, which is the study of dinosaurs, and I kind of went to school for it. I went to school for anthropology and archaeology, which is a sister science, to say the least. But there was a fun little thing up at the Sci-Fi Tech blog a little while ago called a Pleo. Now, this is an animatronic dinosaur that, yeah, okay, well, fine, and it's kind of like a It's kind of like a Furby on one hand, because it has like communicating abilities. It can go back and forth between the two different Pleos and everything like that. And I was sitting there reading the articles. I'm like, oh wow, that looks pretty cool. You know, that's fun. But when you head on over to Pleo World, there's actually this noise that it makes that I'm going to try and capture here. Hopefully, you'll be able to hear it if it actually comes up. And it's not. Or is it? All right, there it is. All right, it's starting to come up, so you'll eventually hear the noise. What they're doing is they actually communicate with each other. They have a whole bunch of different things that they can do, and it just seems to be a really cool little gadget. Unfortunately, the price point is a staggering $340. Yeah, there we go. All right. Shh. Yeah, it's kind of like a beagle with constipation, but it's just one of those things where you're looking at it. It looks really cute, looks really fun. They walk around. They have kind of like a couple growth stages there. So you have the infant form, you have the larger form, but they don't actually grow. They just expand their knowledge. So this is like a Tamagotchi for yuppies, I guess. They have points where like one's asleep, the other one walks up and nudges it a little bit, and then it wakes up and makes the noise again. And you hear it. Yeah. But just one of those things I thought was awesome, so I decided to write that up there. It's from Ugobi.com. That's the people who actually make it. So you can head on over there and check my article out about that. Kind of a little bit of pontification about the whole fire truck thing. I really wanted to be a paleontologist. And of course, I ended up as the computer guy. So for at least that department and most of my family, but still. So it's just kind of fun, kind of a little bit of a trip back. Somebody might think it's interesting. Maybe nobody does. All right, that about wraps up the Tech Tidbits section here at the Caffeination. We are going to get right into your PodSafe music and then crank out the caffeinated bits and then move right along. So here from the PodSafe Music Network is Ari Shine and his song Crank It Out. He sounds kind of like a cross between David Bowie and Soundgarden. Hopefully you hear what I mean, and I mean it the best possible way for each one of those two. Now, we're not talking the weird Bowie. We're talking some of the cool stuff that he actually did a little bit earlier on. So again, this is Ari Shine from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com, and his song Crank It Out.
Crank it out, a number for the rock chart. Crank it out, you're just a
Again, that was Ari Shine and his song Crank It Out from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. We'd like to thank everybody who's given us feedback about the show over at ustream.tv. We're trying to get all the audio levels and everything correct, so hopefully this is going to sound correct from here on out. But we have a couple little stories left in the Caffeinated Bits section here at the Caffeination Podcast. One of the things that we are actually trying to do here, which by the way, the show's over at caffeination.com. One of the things we're trying to do here is give you a little rundown on some of the news that we found in the caffeine, coffee, and food-related sections right around here. First one up there is big people need some medical love, too. There's actually Canada's first ambulance service for the morbidly obese. Apparently, if your weight is anywhere between 400 and 1,000 pounds, you were pretty much SOL up to this point. You were not able to fit into a standard ambulance or anything like that. You were actually trying to get put on a flatbed truck, I guess U-Haul, whatever else. So apparently, if you're a big guy, big girl, and you have some problems, you might have a little bit of a cardiac issue going on. If you're in the city of Calgary, you're going to not have any problems anymore. They actually have a series of ambulances that are, I guess, have some wider load signs on the back and maybe a couple industrial strength shocks there. So that's the first little thing. I thought it was just kind of funny, so I thought I'd throw it out there. Next thing I found is one of the things over at gizmag.com. There's apparently a system of people that are getting together to try and do the ultimate bubble blowing competition. Yes, the decades old tradition. Since 1928, there was a patent on bubble gum itself, trying to have a whole bunch of people get together and see if you could create the largest bubble, see if you could create the fastest, the most amount in a minute. So apparently there's now a society for them over at UBBL, so the Ultimate Bubble Blowing League. They have a picture of LeBron James up on their little site over there, and you can download all kinds of stuff from their website, apparently. I just thought it was one of those fun things that they had out there. Trying to find some of the records. The only one that they actually had up there is actually using a standard kind of chewing gum. They actually got up to a 23-inch bubble. I have no clue how this has happened. I think the most I ever got before popping in my face. And if you're looking at over at UStreetNobTV, I've had facial hair for quite a long time, so that always ends up being mess. But I think the most I've ever gotten is like a 5 or 6-inch bubble. Unfortunately, LeBron only seems to be pulling somewhere around a 3. Maybe it's going to get bigger, but still. 23 inches. Unbelievable idea to imagine something going that big. All right, now the next thing we have up here is actually from over at Gizmodo.com. It's actually a every guy's dream of a grill. It's called the Carbecue. And now you imagine the front end of a Chevy. Actually, I think this is a... yeah, it's a Monaro GTS, but one of the things that they have here is the front end of the car. Now, I think people have seen this before. The headlights are intact, the grill's intact, and I think the radiator's there, too. You have the grill itself is where the engine block would be, and there's serving plates off to either side, and then you can have the whole thing going. I'm pretty sure most of the people would not be able to do this if you're married. I know the wife, at least on mine, would definitely veto this, so hopefully... But it seems kind of funny. Unfortunately, it's all custom built at this point in time, so there's no way to just order one of these. This would definitely be high on my list if I was a bachelor, but it doesn't really seem to be working that way. Alright, second to last story we got here is Starbucks in Ethiopia have actually made up. Apparently they all kissed and made up last week, and there wasn't a whole lot of information being put out about it, but we're starting to get little dribs and drabs of the information. Things that are going good and going bad in the deal. Basically, in case you haven't heard, Ethiopia for a long time has kind of held that they have a copyright on certain kinds of coffee, certain names that a coffee is associated with. Basically, they're kind of like wine. Depending on the region, depending on a whole bunch of different things, the coffee has different names. So apparently it's Sidamo, Harar, and a very long word. I mean, we're talking like that, like, 10, 12 inches long here, about different kinds of stuff there. But so basically three varietals of coffee, all very high end. And they said on the whole scale of things, Ethiopia is a very small coffee producing country. However, they produce very high quality stuff. So it would be in Starbucks' best interest to play nice. First of all, anytime you have a company as large as Starbucks actually throwing down on a small guy like Ethiopia, I mean, you're really not going to end up on the positive side of the public relations spin there. So both sides are apparently very happy with the deal they got going there. Starbucks is actually going to increase the amount of coffee that they buy from Ethiopia. Ethiopia was awarded the rights to the names themselves, and they're actually going to negotiate on whole. So previously, Starbucks had actually negotiated with individual farmers and kind of, yeah, I guess buffaloed them and bulldogged them a little bit into getting a lower price on the coffee. So it's not going to really happen that way anymore. So good idea. I mean, great idea, actually. And the only other thing that they were saying, at least in the article that we have linked from over at bdafrica.com, it's Business Daily Africa. The only other thing that they were saying is there's a couple other countries that would really benefit from this. This is a precedent-setting relationship that's being established here. The other one that they're saying that would be really good for this to happen to is Kenya, and unfortunately the Kenyan coffee has actually become kind of generalized. It's a name that gets kind of bandied about. In the Philadelphia area, there's a local chain of convenience stores called Wawa. Yeah, I know it's a funny name, but Wawa, and they actually have a kind of coffee called just Kenyan dark roast. And when you actually walk into the Wawa, you can tell the Kenyan dark as soon as you walk in the door, just because it's the really dark roasted coffee with the white stripes down it, so it looks like a zebra print on the actual glass. It doesn't actually affect the taste, and there's no smoke or anything coming off it, but it is really good coffee, let me tell you. And I would actually be willing to pay a little bit more money for it if they were to pass that increase along to some of the other farmers. That'd be just awesome. So hopefully they'll find a way to take the Ethiopian deal and broker that into a better situation for them. And then the final thing that we have here at the Caffeination Podcast, the final little bit of nugget we have here is the Guide to Cupping. Now, if you're like myself and you're just somebody who's really addicted to coffee, you just love it, you can't seem to live life without it, then this idea of cupping might be a little bit different for you. It's kind of like there's two kinds of people. There's people who go to wine tastings, and there's people who go to who just drink wine. I mean, I'm not talking like Mad Dog 2020 or anything like that. I'm talking more along the lines of people who say, oh yeah, I just want a red, or I want a white, or kind of like most people with coffee. It's like, oh yeah, I want normal coffee, I want decaf, or I want a dark roast or a light roast if they get a little bit into it. But with this is actually a guide to tasting the smaller flavors within it. I thought I'd pass it along some of the readers and the listeners here at the Caffeination. So it basically what it involves in is a certain way that you sip the coffee. Now, I didn't know there was a way to drink coffee. Basically, I always thought you took mug and drank coffee. I mean, it seemed to be the simplest thing in the world to me, and one of the things that I actually thought would be a little bit better is like, okay, I'll expand my horizons, I'll take a look at some of it. Now, I'm not going to go into there's actually tools you use. You're supposed to have a silver spoon. I don't have a silver spoon. I'm using a plain steel one. What you do is you take a little pour the coffee, you grind it to the exact same consistency, and you're not just supposed to do this with one kind of coffee. No, you're supposed to do this with like three or four different kinds of coffee at a time. Now, I have, on average, maybe two kinds of coffee in the house at any given point in time. One of those being caffeinated and the other one being decaffeinated. So I'm not really going to hold a cupping ceremony. I'm not going to have a whole just a series of coffees lined up on my table, because frankly, that seems to be a little bit ostentatious for what I'm trying to do here. I mean, this is a show dedicated to the love of coffee and technology. This is not a show dedicated to spending crap loads of money on all the different tiny little pieces of coffee that are out there. So basically, you're supposed to brew your coffee, you're supposed to grind it, you're supposed to use spring water, pre-measured, everything is exactly the same. So there is sort of a science to it, and I appreciate that. So what you basically do is, everything's supposed to be either 6 cups or 8 cups of actual water, all clear water, all spring water, and then you grind all the coffee to the same consistency. So if you have something like we have upstairs, it was a gift for our wedding, it's the Cuisinart Grind and Brew. It grinds coffee the exact same way every single time. And it's great, but it would not necessarily be. You're supposed to actually weigh the number of beans you have and everything else like that. So what this ends up doing is you create 4 or 5 different sections of coffee. So you would have, okay, the first one is like a Colombian dark roast. The second one is a Guatemalan lighter roast. You go through the different varietals you have. And you actually take a spoon, you skim across the top of it, and you blow on it gently to cool it down. Now, of course, I didn't bring the spoon down to actually show the people looking at Ustream, because that would have been intelligent. And then what you do is you take a very fast sip, kind of right across the top. You know, the kind that you usually don't do in public. And then what that does is it allows the coffee to aerate as it passes over your tongue and brings out a lot of the smaller flavors that may be in there. Like there might be a hint of nutty in the background or maybe a darker and earthier tone. And it might be a little bit harder for you to realize, might be a little bit harder for you to pick up some of the different flavor profiles that are out there. But it's kind of like the same thing with wine. I mean, going back to that, if nobody told you how to differentiate the different kind of wines, if nobody told you that you had to actually spin the glass to volatilize the aromatic esters, and by the way, that took a long time to actually get that phrase out correctly, several wine tastings, but if you didn't know that you had to volatilize the esters, and you didn't know you had to do X, Y, and Z before you took that very first sip, and that you didn't know that you had to bring air in with the sip, then you might not be able to get the full effect of the wine. And it's the same thing with coffee, and I never actually thought about it. But basically, when you have a cup of coffee that you're drinking and your mouth is closed, and you just take one standard normal sip, you're basically ending up with the exact same thing. You're ending up with a mouthful of coffee, which is not a bad thing on any given day. But if you're trying to tell the differences between the different varietals, if you bring air in with it in that fast sipping motion right across the top of the spoon, then you actually get a lot more of the flavor. And I didn't believe this. I thought this was basically crap. So what I did was I took the two kinds of coffee that we have here. I took the Chock Full of Nuts original roast, and I took the decaf coffee that comes in those little baggies that you can put in there. And I took, actually, I'm sorry, the third kind that we have. I also took the instant Chock Full of Nuts coffee that we have up here. And I created my own tiny little tasting upstairs, or cupping rather. And you actually could tell the difference. And I'm not talking just between caffeinated and decaffeinated. I am one of those people who can tell right off the bat if the coffee is being decaffeinated. It's a way that it tastes. It tastes slightly more watery. It has a slightly, I don't even know how to describe it exactly, and maybe several more could tell me, but it has a completely different flavor profile when you actually have a decaf coffee. And some people just, drink the coffee, so, I mean, that's fine if that's your thing, but still. I thought that would be a good thing to pass along, even to the non-coffee drinking people out there. Hopefully, you might learn a little bit of something. I mean, even if you don't take it into account with coffee, you don't take it into account with wine, whatever you enjoy, if you'd like to see if there's a deeper flavor profile, it's all in how you drink it. It can even be an orange juice, so I've been told. You can tell in honey. There's different kinds of honey that are out there. And if you head on over to caffeination.com, we have our recipes section up at the top. And you click on that, there's actually a link to an article that I wrote about different sweeteners and different spices that you can use to enhance your coffee. Now, one of the things that I really never understood until we went to a German festival here last year, and they had a Pennsylvania Dutch table set up with a whole bunch of different honey that was on there. And I had no clue, okay, this is clover honey, this is a different kind of blended honey. They actually really do taste completely different when you imbibe them the same way. And when you actually take that, a couple seconds to actually say, okay, now this is how you're supposed to drink the coffee, or this is how you're supposed to taste the honey. So it was kind of fun. Well, that just about wraps it up here for the Caffeination Podcast. I'd like to thank everybody who took the time to watch us over at Ustream.tv, and also the people who are taking the time to listen to us over at the Caffeination Podcast. But our podcast lives over at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. And we are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also proudly listed over at blueberry.com, BLUBRRY. And if you'd like to send us a comment, feedback, suggestion, whatever else, please tell us how we're doing both over at Ustream and on the podcast itself at 215-240-1319. Or you can actually click the Call Me button on our homepage, and the phone service that we use will call you for free, and you can leave a message for us. I don't know how it works, but it's kind of cool. Or you can head on over to myspace.com/caffeination and leave us a message over there. All right, well, we'd like to thank everybody for listening here at the Caffeination. This has been Caffeination 141, the extra long edition. Hopefully everybody enjoyed it. Thanks for listening, people, and stay caffeinated.